additional artillery and ammunition are on the way from the United States to help Ukraine's army.
Right now, it's a concentrated artillery duel in the east. It's why we put so much emphasis on providing 108 M777 howitzers and a couple hundred thousand rounds of ammunition.
Plus, bringing the Russian leadership to justice for alleged atrocities means Ukraine has to win the war.
If we're going to hold that whole chain of command to account, they have to lose.
Today is Thursday, June 2nd. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Herman, in for Steve Miller. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says the front lines for the war against Russia currently are longer than 1,000 kilometers. In a video address Thursday to the Parliament of Luxembourg, Zelensky acknowledged the Russians currently occupy 20% of Ukrainian territory, and in less than 100 days, they have killed at least tens of thousands of people.
Потрібно більше зброї для України, сучасної, яка забезпечить перевагу нашої держави над Росією.
The Ukrainian leader in his speech also called on the West to step up its supplies of weapons to Kyiv and additional sanctions on Moscow that would allow Ukraine to emerge victorious. We also have more details today on the latest weapons the United States is sending to Ukraine. The highlight of the latest package, valued at $700 million, is four of the High Mobility Artillery Rocket Systems, or HIMARS, which can strike targets at a range of about 80 kilometers. The assistance also includes four Mi-17 helicopters, 15 tactical vehicles, five counter-artillery radars, two air surveillance radars, 1,000 Javelin missiles, 6,000 anti-armor weapons, 15,155-millimeter artillery rounds, and various spare parts. This was detailed at the Defense Department on Wednesday by the Pentagon's Policy Undersecretary Colin Cowell, who explained it'll be weeks before the rocket systems, already pre-positioned in Europe, can be deployed by the Ukrainians.
These aren't turnkey. These, of course, are systems that the Ukrainians need to be trained on. We think that'll take around 3 weeks. And they need to know not just how to use the systems, but, of course, how to maintain the system. So think of logistics, maintenance, things like that. So it'll be a number of weeks until that training is complete.
The defense undersecretary said the new package is coming at a critical time for the Ukrainian forces.
In the last several days, the Russians have made some incremental progress in and around the Donbass. They have not had a decisive breakthrough, and the Ukrainians are putting up a heck of a fight. And right now, it's a concentrated artillery duel in the east. It's why we put so much emphasis on providing 108 M777 howitzers and a couple hundred thousand rounds of ammunition. Most of those howitzers are currently in the fight, and they're helping the Ukrainians a great deal. So I think we're not seeing the Ukrainian defenses buckle. They're hanging on. But it is a grinding fight, and we believe that these additional capabilities will arrive in a time frame that's relevant and allow the Ukrainians to very precisely target the types of things they need for the current fight.
With this latest announcement, the United States has committed approximately $5.3 billion in military aid to Ukraine since the beginning of the administration of President Joe Biden. About $4.6 billion of that amount, according to the Pentagon, has been sent to Kyiv since the February 24th invasion by Russia of Ukraine. I'm now joined by Mark Kansian, a retired Marine colonel and combat veteran who also, after uniform service, fought bureaucratic battles inside the U.S. government and is now a senior advisor for the International Security Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Mark, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me on the show.
We just heard the comments of Undersecretary Kall, and one of the questions he received from Pentagon reporters is, what took so long for U.S. officials to approve Ukraine's request for these weapon systems? What's your answer to that?
One of the concerns the United States has had as it provides these weapons is the ability of the Ukrainians to absorb them. Now, we have been inundating them with new kinds of weapons. You know, in the beginning, we gave them weapons that were very easy to operate, the javelins, the stingers, very sophisticated weapons, but relatively easy to learn how to use. Then we sent them some major weapon systems that they already had in their inventory, things like some tanks, D-300 air defense systems. The Ukrainians then were able to use their existing maintenance capabilities, their existing supply chains to operate them. Then we started sending them systems they had never used before in the United States, sending howitzers and armored personnel carriers and air defense radars and anti-artillery radars. And of course, then the Germans sending systems, the French sending systems, the Canadians, the Brits. I think that the United States is worried that if we just send too much stuff, they will not be able to absorb it. And as a result, they won't be able to use it. That would undermine the consensus about supplying Ukraine. So I think that may have been the biggest reason. Now, there are also some policy reasons about rockets in particular, and we can talk a little more about that also.
Yes, the initial delivery will be of four HIMARS armed with limited range guided multiple launch rockets known by the acronym GMLRS, as there's always got to be an acronym. Mark, are the Ukrainians getting what they desired here?
Well, there's no question they're getting what they desired. The Ukrainian officials, President Zelensky, have been quite outspoken about their desire to get these rocket systems. And in fact, at every step along the way, the Ukrainians have been quite outspoken about what it is they want. And I think the two staffs have also worked together pretty closely so that we can understand better about what they want and they understand better about what we're able to provide. And I think this is another instance of that. So yes, we are giving them what they asked for. And it's a reasonable system to have. And I think if the Ukrainians had 2 years to absorb all of this new equipment, there wouldn't be any issues about the ability to assimilate it.
There is concern the 3-week training period for the Ukrainians to operate and maintain the HIMARS chews up valuable time right now as the Russians advance in the eastern part of Ukraine. Are you concerned about that from a tactical perspective?
Well, there's no question that it'd be better to get the systems out there immediately. The problem is that the Ukrainians have to learn how to use them. They don't really have an equivalent system, and they have to learn how to maintain them. These are fairly complicated systems. The trucks by the fire controls are pretty sophisticated. And 3 weeks is extremely abbreviated. If this were a U.S. unit that was converting from, say, a cannon artillery unit to a HIMARS unit, it would take several months of training and turnover, doing it very methodically, but very carefully.
Well, Undersecretary Kall praised the Ukrainians on Wednesday for being very adaptable and quick learners, so we shall see. Mark Kansian, as always, thank you for joining us on VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine.
Glad to be on the show.
There appears to be no quick end to Russia's war on Ukraine. That is the assessment of U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
We can't predict how this is going to play out, when this is going to play out. As best we can assess right now, we are still looking at many months of conflict. Again, that could be over tomorrow if Russia chose to end the aggression. We don't see any signs of that right now.
Blinken spoke alongside NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg in Washington on Wednesday. The alliance leader was asked by a reporter about the nuclear threats from Moscow and Russian forces conducting nuclear exercises.
NATO and NATO allies are, of course, monitoring very closely what Russia does, including their nuclear exercises. And we have also followed very closely the nuclear rhetoric that President Putin and other Russian leader has have expressed over the last months. This nuclear saber-rattling rhetoric is dangerous, and it is something that is only increasing tensions. At the same time, we have not seen any changes in Russia's nuclear posture, and we also remind Russia on the fact that actually as late as in January they agreed in the UN a statement where they stated clearly that the nuclear war cannot be won and should not be fought. So Russia knows that any use of nuclear weapons would totally change the nature of a conflict, and therefore nuclear weapons should not be used.
Stoltenberg met today at the White House with President Biden and National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan. Blinken, meanwhile, is also expressing concern about the growing global food shortage caused by Russia invading Ukraine. He noted there are 20 million to 25 million tons of grain sitting in silos near Ukrainian ports that cannot be moved to ships, in part because there are 85 maritime vessels at the port of Odessa full of grain.
At the same time, we're looking at every other possible route to get wheat, grains, other things out of Ukraine and onto world markets. All of that work is ongoing. In terms of what Russia risks, well, I would start with what's left of its reputation. It seeks relationships with countries around the world, including many countries that are now the victim of Russian aggression because of growing food insecurity resulting from that aggression.
Ukraine today said it is working with international partners to create a UN-backed mission to restore Black Sea shipping routes. Foreign Ministry spokesman Oleg Nikolenko, in a Facebook post, says Kyiv is calling on countries whose food security may suffer more from Russian aggression against Ukraine to use their contacts with Moscow to force it to lift the blockade of Ukrainian seaports and end the war. Accountability for Russia for the alleged atrocities its soldiers are accused of committing in Ukraine is of concern to the international community, especially to prosecutors in Kyiv and the U.S. State Department, which has launched numerous initiatives to help gather evidence and prepare for possible war crimes trials. That was a subject discussed during a U.S. Institute of Peace event in Washington on Wednesday. A former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, William Taylor, was asked if a loser in a war has ever successfully held the winner accountable for atrocities.
That's exactly the right question. If we're going to hold President Putin to account and his whole chain of command, his minister of defense, his general officers, commanders, all the way down to the soldiers who committed these war crimes, these atrocities, if we're going to hold that whole chain of command to account, they have to lose. Because the answer to your question is no.
Taylor, who served as ambassador to Ukraine under President Bush and Obama from 2006 through 2009, and then again for 7 months from June of 2019 under President Trump, was asked at the USIP event, what does winning look like for Ukraine, which now sees a chunk of its eastern territory in Russian hands?
The answer to the question of what the goal is, there needs to be a sovereign, independent Ukraine that can continue to develop, economically. So free Ukraine, even if there is some portion, whether it's just Donbass or Crimea, that is still occupied, free Ukraine can join the European Union. Free Ukraine could apply to NATO again. Free Ukraine could develop. Think North Korea, South Korea. South Korea developed pretty well its economy, even though it was divided. Think of West Germany, East Germany. West Germany evolved, helped found the European Union. West Germany was in NATO, even while the Soviet Union controlled East Germany. So a free Ukraine, sovereign, that is not under the control of the Russians, democratic, can continue to develop while not giving up an eventual claim on its full territory.
listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Herman. The head of the U.S. Cyber Command, Army General Paul Nakasone, has confirmed offensive cyber operations in support of Ukraine. Nakasone, who is also director of the National Security Agency, in an interview with Sky News, confirmed a series of such U.S. operations across the full spectrum, offensive, defensive, and information operations. He did not provide details. At Wednesday's White House briefing, Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre was asked whether such actions violate the U.S. policy of avoiding a direct military conflict with Moscow.
We just don't see it as such. We have talked about this before. We've had our cyber experts here at the podium lay out what our plan is that has not changed. So the answer is just simply no.
When Matthew Parker, an American veteran with 22 years of service in the U.S. Army, heard that Russian forces had invaded Ukraine, he thought about a Ukrainian-American soldier who had served alongside him with U.S. forces in Iraq and decided he wanted to help Ukrainians defend their homeland. Parker is among thousands of Americans that Ukraine says have joined its new International Legion, and he is now helping to train members of the Ukrainian army. Miroslava Gongodze caught up with the American volunteer upon his arrival in Poland.
American veteran Matthew Parker is arriving in Warsaw, Poland, on his way to Ukraine. He is one of many volunteers from around the world who have stepped up to help to defend Ukraine against Russia. As part of the Ukrainian International Legion, Parker's job is to help train members of the Ukrainian army.
I have no expectations. Let me see what my job is. Let me see how many soldiers we have. Let me see what shape, you know, our equipment is. Then I'll know what my job is. Right now, I'm just somebody in a vehicle getting a ride to work.
A veteran with 22 years experience, Matthew's 5 days are behind him. He says his job now to help protect Ukraine and stop the war.
It's the year 2022. Why are we fighting at all? Why haven't we reached a point where we can sit down, talk about things, negotiate, you know, and not fight? I mean, we're old enough now. You know, our societies are old enough now. This isn't the 1400s. You know, we're supposed to be, you know, new technology and education, and we're supposed to be advanced.
For Parker, who served in Bosnia, Iraq, Afghanistan, and many other places, the battle against Russian aggression in Ukraine is a fight for civilization.
This war started back in 2014. In Ukraine, but it goes back further than that. Everyone thinks it's 2014. It's not 2014. This started well before that. This started before Ukraine was part of the Soviet Union. These are old fights. These are old arguments that have come back because one generation passes on the hate to the next generation. That doesn't end here. They hate for generations. So I think this is really important because this is kind of a wake-up call for Europe. They never thought this could happen again.
Contact front!
Contact front! With this deep conviction, Parker is putting his military skills to work again. First at the training ground in Poland and now on the ground in Ukraine. Ostap Semerak is the International Legion's coordinator.
The decision was based on a political will to invite all people around the world that are willing to support Ukraine, support Ukrainian people and our nation in our struggle against authoritarianism, against aggression of Russian Federation, and to support democracy and Ukrainian democracy and Ukrainian nation as well.
Semerak, a former government minister, says volunteers have come from many parts of the world, but they must meet specific requirements.
We are checking each one candidate and see that is outside of the demands of our military headquarters. After feedback to each one, each man, each application, we have organized movement of those people to Ukraine. We have absolutely clear and understandable request that should be with the age from 30 to up to 45, and experience not only military but as well the fight experience, and mostly veterans from different government armies, and they are now willing to join our struggle.
Matthew Parker, who is over 50, did not fit the age requirements and struggled to join the International Legion. However, after closely studying his skills and experience, the Ukrainian army took him in to help train and build its own new International Legion. Miroslava Gongadze, VOA News, Warsaw.
Ukrainian Galina Pashkevich witnessed atrocities by the Nazis during World War II, including watching her city, Kyiv, get bombed. After Russia invaded Ukraine in February, she left her homeland for the United States. Angelina Bogdasarian in Los Angeles spoke to her in this report narrated by Anna Rice.
86-year-old Kyiv native Galina Pashkevich thought she had seen it all. A World War II survivor, she witnessed Nazis commit many horrors and said she never thought she'd see war again. Then Russia invaded Ukraine in February, and like many others, Pashkevich fled. With the help from her family, she arrived in the United States.
I left with a small backpack, 5 kilos, if that. I took a vyshivanka with me, a memory stick with all my research papers. I'm a botanist by training, graduated from the Kyiv University. I have 250 scientific publications and articles. I authored 12 books.
She was born in 1936. In the fall of 1941, the Nazis came into Kyiv. But the bombing started before that.
I remember the whining of flying bombs, the high-pitched sound of diving planes. It was very scary. The Nazis used to lead Jews along this street to Babi Yar. My sister and I heard the noise and ran to stand on the corner. We saw Germans with lowered guns walk on the sidewalk and on the road, a stream of people with carts carrying children. We just stood there and watched.
But now it is Russians bombing Ukraine. Pashkevich says she cannot stop crying when she thinks of Ukrainian children who should be playing outside instead of hiding in basements. She recalls risking it all to escape.
We hear explosions, sirens are wailing, we have to hide. But instead we're hurrying to get to the garage. It took us 3 days to get to the border. We didn't eat, didn't leave the car. As we were driving, we found out there were long lines at the Polish border. My grandson told us to head to the Slovakian border instead.
Pashkevich's grandson met her in Slovakia. She still can't believe that this time Russia is Ukraine's foe. Pashkevich says she believes that Ukrainians have united against a common enemy, a unity she thought was hard to achieve during peaceful times.
We all believe in victory. We believe this horror will end through hardships and losses, through suffering, but it will end.
And free to tell stories and bear witness to the horrors of two wars nearly 80 years apart. For Angelina Bogdasarian in Los Angeles, California, Anna Rice, VOA News.
That's going to do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thank you so much for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman. Good night.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.